Herbie, hour two, let's get it.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to two on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Thanks for hanging out with me today. It's appreciated. We're on until 2 o'clock. Kevin Fishbane of The Athletic is going to join me in the next segment. I want to run a couple of different things by him. But before we do that, I wanted to talk with you about football and the NFL, because there's some stuff that's kind of quietly popping off in the NFL. And if you listen to the show, my stance on the NFL returning has been, I don't know about football. Now, maybe if we see hockey succeed, it'll be easier to imagine football returning, but I can't imagine that they don't start delayed, no matter what. No matter if they're playing the 16 games or the 12 games or the 10-game season, I can't imagine they don't start delayed. Training camps are supposed to start less than 3 weeks from now. And they just today, had agreed upon the protocols that are going to be in place for players to return back to the facilities. That's even before we start talking about how coaches are going to run practices. And that has been a real issue. Coaches have talked about it a little bit. John Harbaugh talked about it, and then they kind of told him to stop acting like things are going to be bad. If you're seeing all this stuff happen with baseball, which is a sport, one of the team sports that would seem to make the most sense as far as social distancing goes, what happens when you're talking about not a contact sport? Soccer is a contact sport. Basketball is a contact sport. Football is a collision sport. There's a difference. When it comes to holding practices, the practices that everyone needs, offensive linemen going up against defensive linemen, I don't know how you can do it consistently and safely. And I think that when there was this kind of false sense of security with football and with the NFL in particular, because they had time, unlike the other sports that were in at the end of their season and baseball that was just getting ready to start up, football had time. When we sat around and we watched the draft, you're like, yeah, it's April. Everything will be figured out with the virus and whatnot by the time September comes around. And then you looked up and OTAs were being held virtually. And then you looked up, mini camps were being held virtually. The guys weren't actually practicing. If you're someone that's a Mitch fan, if you're a Mitchell Trubisky fan, I actually think that as it stands right now, the stars are aligning for him to be the starting quarterback for the Bears if there is a football season. Nick Foles, I don't even know if Nick Foles has moved here yet. And to not be able to practice, and Mitch was doing the perfunctory, I'm the quarterback, so I'm going to hold some practices with guys stuff. But are you really going to send Nick Foles out there to start for you in September with not a lot of time to prepare and maybe no preseason? I find that difficult to believe. So I talked with some people and I heard some stuff over this past week that I wanted to share with you, because there's legitimately, like, now you're starting to see like trickles of stories of why a restart in the NFL might be problematic. I want to start with Michael David Smith. Michael David Smith of Pro Football Talk, I only have him on the show like maybe once or twice a year. I always love when I do get him on, because I know that he listens and he's plugged into what's going on nationally, even though he lives here in Chicago. We talked about the problems that go along with an NFL restart. Check out what he said.
I am sensing less confidence now than there was a month ago. A month ago, I think the NFL really felt like we can do enough tests that we can rapidly identify any player who's infected, quarantine him before he can spread it to his teammates or to his opponents, and we can make this season work. And I'm sensing a lot less confidence about that now, because we've seen college football teams that are having significant outbreaks. Clemson had like a third of their players test positive. And then we're also seeing that the other three sports that are all hoping to get started this month are all starting to run into some issues where players are saying they're not confident that they can participate. Teams are having to shut down their practice facilities. Just today, the Washington Nationals canceled a practice because they said they still don't have the results back from tests of all their players on Friday. We're just seeing more and more instances of the way that this virus can spread within an athletic team. And it just kind of makes sense because there is close contact in sports. It's obvious that playing sports, practicing sports, is a place where the virus can spread. And I am sensing less confidence. The NFL is still saying the season will start on time. I think the NFL is hoping to learn some lessons from what works or doesn't work with baseball, basketball, and hockey. But I really do think that they are less confident that they can make it work today than they were a month ago.
When we were talking about the draft, you know, like back in April, it felt like they had all the time in the world. And now you look up and training camp's supposed to start in 3 weeks, and they still haven't devised a way to be able to run practice for the linemen. That to me tells me everything I need to know right now on where things stand.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about like the offensive and defensive line, there's just not a way to practice those positions without a lot of close contact. And you know, what happens if the NFL is still insisting that, hey, we're going to find a way to make this work, and then, you know, the day before the Bears opener, six offensive linemen and five defensive linemen all test positive. You know, there's been an outbreak in the Bears locker room, and these guys who are sweating on each other in practice all infected each other. You know, what would you do? And I still haven't heard a good answer to that question. So the NFL needs to come up with a good answer pretty soon here. I mean, we are in fact closing in on training camps opening and then a shortened preseason and then the regular season in September. And I still haven't heard very good answers about how they can make it work. And so it's hard to be optimistic they can make it work when you're not hearing a real good answer to the question of what happens if there's a big outbreak on a team right before a game.
So that was Michael David Smith of Pro Football Talk. We had a really great conversation with him about a lot of things, but this returning to the game thing has been front and center in my mind as we get closer and closer to when training camps are supposed to start. Remember, two of the preseason games have already been eliminated. They're gone. And there are players that are saying that they'd rather get rid of the entire preseason and focus their time in the 48 days that they would have between camp starting and the season starting to just focus on getting everything right at their own facilities. I tell you that before I read you this. This is from the NFLPA's president, J.C. Treader. He wrote this piece for NFLPA.com. He does a thing like every once in a while called the President's Corner. The title of it is Prioritizing Player Safety in a Pandemic. He writes, our normal return date for training camp is quickly approaching, and we are still far from back to quote-unquote normal. Our main concern is player safety, both in regard to preventing the virus transmission, as well as preventing injuries after an extended and historically unique layoff. Like many other industries, football's resistance to change is based on the belief that the best way to run things is the way that we've always run things. that pervasive thought process will stop this season in its tracks. Since March, we have had hours of return-to-work meetings, reviewed research, and developed detailed protocols, all of which will be wasted if the NFL refuses to think and act differently when it comes to getting through a full season. Players don't just want to return to work. We want to stay at work. We did our due diligence and reviewed the impact of returning to play football after an unusually long period. For example, following the extended break after the 2011 lockout, injuries increased 25%. Achilles injuries more than doubled and hamstring strains went up 44%. As a preventative measure during the COVID-19 pandemic, the NFLPA and NFL formed a joint committee of doctors, trainers, and strength coaches to develop protocols designed to bring players up to full speed in a healthy way when they return. The NFL initially accepted and implemented the joint committee suggestions, including items like no joint practices and no fans at training camp. However, the NFL was unwilling to follow the joint committee's recommendation of a 48-day training camp schedule. Despite these experts' assessment that teams face a serious risk of player injury spikes this year based on past NFL data and recent findings from sports leagues that have already returned to play this year. The NFL is unwilling to prioritize player safety and believes that the virus will bend to football. He goes on to write, making decisions outside the lens of safety is both dangerous and irresponsible. So you have that. Now, the agreement that the NFLPA and the NFL agreed to, it looks like now there are some instances where fans are going to be allowed into training camp practices or facilities in states that would allow that to happen. And the players are not entirely happy with that part of it. And now there's another thing that players are not going to be happy about. Remember in baseball when the owners were like, well, you know, who could have seen this pandemic coming? We're going to lose a lot of money. And we might need to do some stuff salary-wise with the players to mitigate the losses that we're going to see with no fans in attendance. It's starting to happen in the NFL, too. Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network filed this report.
Well, let's start with the preseason issue, because that really impacts everything else in terms of the schedule for camp. The crux of that issue is the joint medical committee that was set up between the NFL and the NFLPA recommended a 48-day camp, a longer acclimation period, and a shortened preseason. The NFL asked the PA weeks ago if they would report a couple weeks early to camp to kind of make the calendar work and still play a couple preseason games. The union said no, because the collective bargaining agreement says they're not reporting until the end of July. The NFL still intends to play two preseason games with a much shorter acclimation period now. The NFLPA continues to push for no preseason games to get that entire 48-day camp in. They are still at odds right now over testing as well, specifically the NFLPA wanting daily testing for COVID-19. As of now, the league is not advocating for that level of frequency. And today, the economics started to come into focus as another issue that these sides are going to be working through. I am told that the NFLPA informed the Board of Representatives in a call this afternoon that the NFL has proposed escrowing 35% of players' salaries throughout the 2020 season to account for some costs and potential lost revenue because of COVID-19. Now, how was the union responding to that? Don Davis, one of the union executives, said on a call with all players a short time ago, basically, we told them to kick rocks. But let's be clear now. Because you are going to have a potential revenue loss that could escalate to $4 billion if there are no fans in the stands this season, that needs to be made up. There is a true-up in the CBA where you'd have to make up for that on future salary caps starting in 2021. From the union's perspective, they would love to spread that over an 11-year CBA, spread it out until 2030. Obviously, the NFL is thinking about cost savings right now. They have a lot to work through here with players scheduled to begin reporting to training camps in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah. They just signed a collective bargaining agreement. And I'm sure the players are looking at each other going, what did we do? What did we give them power to do to us? Now, this is the first little thing that the NFL is like, no, we're thinking maybe we'll escrow 35% of the salaries. And players yesterday on Twitter were like, the hell you will. So there could be a problem there. On top of dealing with the virus itself, there might be some financial issues that come into play that we have seen play out in other sports. The NHL has kind of figured theirs out. They have a new collective bargaining agreement with the players, and there seems to be labor peace in the NHL. MLB, you saw how that went down. You saw what ended up happening and how they couldn't come to agreements on a lot of things financially. I was listening to Mully and Haw this morning. I ordinarily would not play back a piece of Mike Lombardi because I feel like there's a lot of times where he's just out here playing a heel when it comes to Mitchell Trubisky, that he's just doing the thing where he tells you how bad Mitchell Trubisky is. But he did share with the guys today something that I thought was interesting and something that I thought that you would need to know. And that is why he thinks that there could be a delayed start or a stop to the NFL season.
We haven't been able to solve it as a country, and it's been an issue, and it's been an issue in states, and it's coming back, and we don't seem to have a handle on it. And I think that there is a sense, and you know, back in March and April, I was convinced we would have football, but I think in light of where we are today, I'm a little bit reticent towards it. I think we will have, you know, will there be 10 games? I don't know. Will there be 12? The schedule was built simply to have 16 games, 12 games, or 10 games. That's how the schedule was built. That's how they went through it. And they could chop off games and they can, but the owners don't want to start the season unless they know they can finish the season, because the Saturday before the first game of the season at 4 o'clock, everybody who's 4 years or older in the National Football League gets their contract guaranteed for skill and injury. And that means the owners would be on the hook for everybody's contract and whether they play games or not.
So there's still a lot to digest before the NFL opens up its training camps. I just want you to be informed. I don't want you to be shocked if we get to 3 weeks from now and they're like, we're going to push training camp back a couple weeks. I want you to know all of the things that are going to go into this. And there's already starting, even with Patrick Mahomes' deal. He was one of the guys on Twitter yesterday, like, they're not escrowing our salaries. That there's a lot of stuff that the NFL still has to figure out. And I'm not saying that they spent the summer twiddling their thumbs. I mean, they clearly were putting in some work. But it doesn't seem like they've come to conclusions on a lot of this stuff. And the season is real close. I'm going to talk with Kevin Fishbane about this next on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
In the last segment, you heard me talking about the NFL and whether or not it's in a place to be able to restart. We went through some of the sound and some of the stories. I wanted to get some context, and that's why we invited our next guest on to the show. I love Kevin Fishbane's work over at The Athletic. I have a subscription to The Athletic so I can read it. You should get one as well. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from over in Melrose Park, or you can just go to alpamonteford.com. Mr. Fishbane, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Lawrence. Thank you for having me.
I got so many questions about the NFL and their ideas of getting started. What do you see as being the difficulties of them getting a full and proper training camp done?
Yeah, well, it's going to be these positive tests, because what is going to be the threshold in terms of if a guy tests positive, what are the plans? You have so many more people that are going to be in your building. How are you going to manage that? I know the Players Association has talked this week about maybe having sessions where there's no more than 20 guys on the field at a time or at practice at a time. There's just, I mean, think about it, Lawrence. I know there's been some rumors and reports about the rosters going down to 75. So let's even assume that's happening. You got 75 players. You got 20 coaches. You've got support staff. You have trainers. I mean, think about Tony Medlin and his equipment staff out there. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 120 people just to have a normal practice. And you think about all those people together, all those people testing. We're seeing some of the difficulties Major League Baseball's having this week. It's just going to be tricky to get in any kind of rhythm where you're at a point where everyone's there, everyone's tested negative, everyone's feeling healthy, everyone's comfortable. I think that's obviously very important that guys feel comfortable being there and trying to hold a six-week training camp.
Yeah, it just seems so strange that we are so close. Like, we're so close to training camp that my body clock has gone off, and I haven't covered the NFL on a day-to-day basis in a while. So we're so close to when camps usually would start, and we know that they canceled the Hall of Fame game, and that was an easy cancellation. Like, that's super easy to do. The teams never want to go and play in that game anyway. But then you get to, well, let's take two of the preseason games off the calendar. And it makes you pay attention, and you go, well, wait, what does that mean? So when you heard that they had canceled those two games, what do you think it signified?
Well, I think it's an understanding that, you know, A, when you look around the country, you know, with cases on the rise in a lot of states, you know, the league realized that this is going to be a lot harder to put on a game than they thought. I mean, when I was doing that math earlier, you know, multiply that 125 by two, and then add in all the people you need to be in a stadium. You're talking about 300 people there and trying to make that happen. And it just doesn't seem like you can make that happen 6-7 weeks from now. So, you know, it made all the sense in the world. I think the other thing the Players Association has brought up this week is the injury fear and the injury risk. You know, they looked at, there were numbers that I believe it was J.C. Tretter, the NFLPA president, mentioned some of the percentages of, you know, how Achilles tears went up in 2011 when there was a lockout and they didn't have OTAs and minicamp. ACL tears went up. So all these players too, you know, they want as full of a training camp as possible. That's why they're pushing for no preseason games, so they can get their bodies completely conditioned and ready to go for the regular season. But Lawrence, if you take out, you know, these right now, every NFL team is guaranteed one home preseason game. Now, you're not going to get that gate. Obviously, you're probably not going to have fans in the stands. They don't have to worry about that so much. But there's TV involved. There's money involved still. So, you know, how is this going to work with the players who want these 48 days? That's what the doctors have said. Give them 48 days to get their bodies ready and to make sure they're all kind of in whatever bubble they can create so they can play these regular season games safely.
And the other thing is, like, I also understand the, even outside of the monetary aspect of the two preseason games that are left on the schedule, the idea of having a road and an away and figuring out the mechanics of getting your team to another city safely and playing a game and playing a game at your home stadium safely. Like, I get it. Like, I think that those things are important. It just seems like when before there seemed to be a lot of time between where we were and where the NFL needed to be, that window has closed so rapidly that to get to the decision-making aspect of this is going to be hard.
Yeah, it's going to be brutal. And I think when we were in April, I mean, the NFL had such a great head start on every other league. They had the benefit of time on their hands. I mean, you and I talked in the spring about how our lives as people covering the NFL were so unchanged compared to, you know, I was very fortunate how little changed in terms of my day-to-day because the NFL schedule was pretty much uninterrupted. You know, we just, you know, get used to doing Zoom interviews instead of going to Hallis Hall a few times. And now, as we're 3 weeks away, and I think if you look at Illinois, and you look at the numbers in Illinois, I'm talking about, you know, the COVID-19, The problem is Illinois' numbers, you're seeing that progress. You're seeing where our positivity percentage is down. And I think that is an example. I think if you look at New York too, that when the NFL was sitting there in April, that's probably what their doctors told them to project, right? They said, look, you know, come June, July, this is where you'll be. Probably where, I don't want to be, flagrant in my throwing these numbers out here, Lawrence, but my assumption is they were told, hey, come June, July, this is where you'll be. You'll be at this end of the curve. And that's not where the rest of the country is right now. So that is obviously exacerbating things. And then what kind of frustrates me as somebody who covers this game and has dealt with a lot of the union versus owner stuff, and I understand it's very tricky, is they're running into a situation that baseball ran into. Mm-hmm. But they had more time. They had all these months to figure out every worst case scenario and talk about the money and to propose these different things. Hey, they could have said in May, they could have had a meeting 2 months ago and said, hey guys, if there's no preseason games, what is going to be our mechanism here? And it's possible that they did have those conversations, or maybe they didn't because they just were so confident. But it really, when I saw some of the reports come out yesterday, I was thinking, why are we having these conversations 3 weeks before training camp? You guys had 3 months, 4 months since this stuff began that you could have been figuring out all these different scenarios, because you do not want to be in a situation where the money is what is keeping you guys there. The safety, I get that, but you do not want to be that league like Major League Baseball was, where it's a money issue.
Kevin Fishbane of The Athletic joining me here as we talk about the NFL. Do you wonder if, because I wonder this, and I just want to know if my gauge needs to be changed. I keep wondering if the players regret signing that CBA too.
Yeah, it's so interesting, Lawrence, because once it was signed, you saw, and this is, we didn't have this in 2011 because social media wasn't then what it is now. You saw guys speaking out against it, that already there were people that were not thrilled about what it meant for some of the, this was a little different where it was some of the guys who make a lot of money who were, risking certain things in the CBA. And I think what people always have to remember about the NFL is when we talk about unions, obviously we're not talking about the, electrical workers union. Okay. Like let's all understand that these guys are playing football. But the flip side of that is too, these are guys whose average career is 3.5 seasons. So the idea of making sure that, all of them can get, paid what the market value is for their services and get that payment, as early as possible, because they have, any day could be that injury that ends their career. There are just so many particulars that go into these negotiations. And I think now, I think that as these two sides are going to be going at it, it could come up where players are like, well, wait a second, the CBA said this. You guys were, remember they were negotiating the CBA during the pandemic. So this was something they could have been kind of thinking about in the back of their minds as they were sorting through this. I do think though, that one of the advantages of getting it done is it should be less animosity between the two sides. Like baseball, they've got their negotiations coming up. So these two sides are already, gearing up for a big fight. The NFL and the players, look, they're never going to be 100% getting along, but at least they got through the major negotiations. So you would think some of this stuff should be easier. But yeah, I imagine that every time money is going to come up in conversation, certain players are going to look back at that CBA and wonder why it was signed in a way that it was signed.
But before I move on to something kind of on the field, what did the Bears say was the difficulty in having OTAs and mini camps and doing it virtually?
Yeah, well, you look at a Bears team that needs to figure out who their starting quarterback is. You can't do that over Zoom. You can't. There's no way you can replicate the live throws. And I'll give you an example that Matt Nagy gave, which is if they're having this meeting over Zoom and they're watching a play, and Mitch Trubisky's watching the play, and Matt Nagy says, "All right, what's your read?" And Mitch Trubisky says, "All right, if we're running this play, my read's going to be, first Allen Robinson and then Anthony Miller, depending on what this linebacker does." Okay, just speculating here. and Matt Nagy goes, good, that's the right read. You know, if this is the defense, what would you do? And Mitch Trubisky spits it back out. The problem is they can't go run that play. They can't go outside and run that play against a defense and watch him do it in practice. And that goes for every level of the team, for every single position. They can watch these, they can watch tape, they can talk about it, they can discuss if X or Y or Z was here, what would I do? But they don't get the film then to actually say, hey, you showed that what you saw in the classroom translated on the field. And so they just lose that aspect. Now, the flip side is I think that they probably came out of it with feeling like everyone's really comfortable with knowing the playbook and knowing the expectations that are to come, but without being able to really do it on the field, you know, and again, I hate to kind of pick on Mitch here, but especially with a quarterback where that's kind of been his challenge is doing it on the field against the live defense. It's harder for the coaches to really have any sense of evaluation of where everybody's at. And that's not even getting into the fitness levels. So there were probably some benefits of getting guys to be much more nitty gritty about the details in terms of the verbiage and talking it through and watching the film. And I think Lawrence too, some of the older guys probably were okay with it. I'm sure a guy like an Akeem Hicks or Robert Quinn doesn't mind not having to do OTAs in minicamp in terms of not having to do some of that extra conditioning stuff because they know how to take care of their bodies at this point. But I just think that there's those on-field drills, you just cannot replicate them, via virtual classroom.
Does that mean that Mitch is ahead of Foles then?
It might, because Mitch then did get to go out and work out with, Cole Kmet and Allen Robinson and David Montgomery and Tariq Cohen. So he was able to kind of run those plays, not against the defense. He knows the guys around him. He knows Cody Whitehair, very well. Those two are good friends. He knows he's got at least four of his starting offensive linemen back. And you look at the receivers, it's the same backfield. That, we talk so much about Nick Foles' familiarity with Matt Nagy, Bill Lazor, John DeFilippo. Well, Mitch Trubisky has that with the players that Nick Foles just doesn't have yet. So I do think that might, that should give him an edge. He thinks it gives him an edge. But it always, what matters is what's going to happen when the defense is on the field. And that kind of leads to another predicament that Matt Nagy is going to face. If there are zero preseason games, then what? Because that, this was going to be a little different in terms of the way Matt Nagy treats the preseason. We were kind of expecting to see the starters out there a little more so that he can solve this quarterback competition for the preseason. If you don't get that, I would imagine that might help Mitch Trubisky even a little bit more to open the season as a starter, just because they might, not to say they'll be the most comfortable with him, but they might just say, okay, look, he already knows a lot of this offense. He knows all these guys. He's been our starter for the past few years. Let's just have him go ahead and get this thing started. And then if things struggle, we've got Nick.
Talking with Kevin Fishbane of The Athletic, read his work on The Athletic. Get a subscription if you can afford it. It's like the first place I go every morning, so you should do that. What were you believing? What were you thinking when you heard about the Patrick Mahomes deal? What was your reaction?
I wasn't surprised. I'll say this, though, I'm okay getting made fun of for this. One of my first thoughts was, why not take like a 3-year, $135 million contract fully guaranteed, right? If you're going to already guarantee him that much, wouldn't you want to take the 3-year deal? You get paid. You're the highest paid guy in football in terms of average salary, guaranteed money. And then 3 years from now, you can renegotiate when this, the salary caps increase and all that stuff. I get the way these guys operate, and Lee Steinberg is obviously, and Chris Cabot, who worked on it, great at their jobs, and there's something to be said about 10 years and $500 million and most expensive contract in sports. And I hate to be a wet blanket about it, Lawrence, but I'm always thinking about how can these guys, manage what they're getting and make sure they're earning market value. And who knows, by 2025, Patrick Mahomes could be a huge bargain. By 2023, he could be a huge bargain for the Chiefs. We don't know. So look, credit to him, credit for the Chiefs to get it done. And I always applaud a player being able to get paid and a team valuing somebody as incredible as him. But the math in me, the thinking about contracts, I mean, like, hey, Could you find a way to make that a 3-year deal and then renegotiate in 3 years or get a new contract in 3 years? That's even more.
Well, what makes you think that? What's the reason behind why Mahomes would have wanted a 10-year deal? Like, is it possible that he is that guy that says the thing about wanting to play in one place and actually believes it?
I think so. Yeah, I absolutely. And I do think that goes for a lot of players. And I would never, you know, as I said, I don't want to bemoan the guy for, you know, being able to say this, I get to be here for 10 years, because as much as guaranteed money is important, so is long-term security. So yeah, he might be that guy. And he says, you know, Andy Reid says he's going to be there the whole time. And it's a great organization. And they've shown that they can build around him. It's going to be obviously a little harder to do that. So, you know, it's true. He might be that guy that is totally comfortable with that and likes the idea of being the first guy with a 10-year or contract for that much money. You know, that's an important thing to have, and setting the bar too for other contracts around the league. My initial take on the contract, wasn't meant to be obviously critical of him for taking it. But I do think guys that are really comfortable where they are with their cities and with their lives and with their organizations, you know, maybe it's fine. And there are all these different mechanisms, obviously, in the contract. We'll learn more about it as the years go by, that, you know, there could be some opportunities if need be. Obviously, you know, we see that, right? We see where players are able to kind of take control a little bit more in this era than in previous eras of finding their way out of contracts if they need to. But, you know, it's fun. I think it's awesome. I think I had a buddy who's a Chiefs fan who texted me a couple days ago, and I was just thinking for him, if you're a Chiefs fan and you know that Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback for the next, at least under contract for the next 12 seasons, you know, all the way until 2031. And I know I'm saying this on Chicago radio, where Bears fans are just, you know, kicking things right now, that this franchise has never had that. But imagine if you're a Chiefs fan right now and you have that, and maybe if you're Patrick Mahomes, if you say, hey, you've already won a Super Bowl here, and as long as you're here, we're going to be good, and you can be here for the next 12 years. I totally get it.
It's very, very awesome for him. I'm very happy for him. Kevin, thanks so much for the time. Thanks for always bringing it whenever you're on the air, and continue to do great work on The Athletic.
I appreciate it, Lawrence. Take care.
That's Kevin Fishbane of The Athletic. He covers the Bears and the NFL for them. I want to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about college football. I had a conversation with someone yesterday, and there's an important point that she made that I wanted you to hear, and I want to talk about the DeSean Jackson nonsense too. We'll do that next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
We talked about this a little bit yesterday with DeSean Jackson. And his foolish and anti-Semitic post that he had on social media and quoting Hitler to do it. And I wanted to talk about it on a couple different levels, and I'm sure I'm probably going to run out of time to do it, so I'm going to try to do it as quickly as I can. In this fight that we're all having about respect and learning and systemic issues of race and culture and class, it is important that the courtesies that we want extended to whatever group we have are extended to other groups. And so when you see DeSean Jackson not even vetting what he's putting out there, which is another thing I'll get to in a second, it's disgusting. And I was appalled that Steven Jackson, who has been on this show, I've actually worked with Jack, I was appalled that his stance seemed to double down instead of taking the cue from DeSean, who's like, ooh, I screwed up pretty bad and I need to learn some stuff. And I would say that it would be incumbent upon DeSean, and I know that there have been people in the Jewish community in Philadelphia that have offered themselves up to be a guide in this regard. I would hope that maybe he doesn't just worry about educating himself, that he allows himself to be educated. Those are different things. And when I saw the Anti-Defamation League of Philadelphia statement yesterday, I found it to be, I thought that their statement was more forgiving than I might be capable of being if the roles were reversed. And so I applaud them for that. One of the other things that bothers me so much about this is something that I think a lot of us experience, and this idea of what it is when it comes to us sharing information with each other and taking information and then putting information on social media. In a very small way, it happens to people inside of sports reporting with fake people and fake accounts. Oh, you know, this fake Woj account is reporting that Derrick Rose is re-signed back with the Bulls, and you get egg on your face because you tweeted it out and it's not true. You didn't do the vetting. You just saw it and you just retweeted it. I think it's a big problem overall for people that there isn't an amount of vetting. There isn't the, well, let me read this and let me see if this is actually something that I want to present as being how I feel. It's very possible this is exactly how DeSean Jackson feels. And if that is how he feels, it's horrific that he feels that way. But I think all of us are in this space where we do need to be careful about how we present ourselves and how we want to be presented, and also how we actually feel about things. Another thing, and this is a smaller issue in this particular case, but it is an issue that I work with frequently when it comes to dealing with my students. The way people misinterpret the concept of free speech is horrifying. I'll make it as simple as I can make it. The First Amendment means that the government cannot prosecute you, cannot jail you for what it is you say. And there are some limitations to free speech. It does not protect you from criticism. Saying that's just my opinion and this is a free country does not exempt you from getting your ass handed to you on those social media platforms when you say something as racist and anti-Semitic as what DeSean Jackson was putting out there. I don't know if that's a lack of education or willful ignorance among citizens of this republic. It is not a catch-all to protect you from the people that you share that information or those thoughts with. It is a safeguard to allow you to speak your mind and not be jailed for what it is that you say, because that was a problem in England and in the early days of this country. I hope that DeSean Jackson is truly sorry, and by looking at his apology, I'm not sure that that's the case, but I think that there needs to be a ton of introspection, and we need to make sure that all of the things we are working towards being better at, bigotry, being anti-gay, racism, and anti-Semitism, I can't believe I didn't say that right. Being anti-Semitic. We need to work on all of those things. All of us do. So while we're pointing fingers, remember to point the thumb and try to be better. DeSean definitely needs to be better. And so does Steven Jackson. A lot better. And I understand where Jack is at right now. He was close with George Floyd, and I'm sure that he is very emotional overall, but that is no excuse for doubling down on anti-Semitic rhetoric. We fought a war. You know what? That's my time. I want to get out of the way. Spiegel and Parkins are coming up next. They got a big show planned for you today. Ooh, Brian Kenny's going to be on at 4 o'clock. That'll be good. I think Shep's cousin is going to be on the show, too. So make sure you listen. I'll be back at noon tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Herbie for his hard work on today's show, too. I got Loho Dailies out. Go listen to them. Talk to you tomorrow at noon here on The Score.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.